Welcome to Series 5, Episode 5 of Conversational Legal Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 5, Episode 5, the screenplay was done by Joe Boyle. It was directed by Julian McSweeney, and the episode synopsis was read out by Sabine.
Jay struggles to get through to either Ebony or Amber. Lex gets a tip-off about Tyson's potential whereabouts, and Ebony comes to a realization about Zoot.
As Mega begins to lose his cool concerning Ram's mysterious vanishing act, telling the Technos that they either find him or his rotting corpse, Java tries to get Mega to relax. The plan is still on schedule, and in fact, she's preparing to move in on Ebony. This leads to a reveal in the final moments of the episode, where Ebony reinstates her belief that she now understands that Zoot is a prophet. Java lies to Ebony and says that she can now see Zoot too. So panel, what did you make of this first glimpse into Mega's controlled facade kind of slipping here, and Java's role in channeling Ebony down this path to losing her mind to Zoot?
Can I just ask, before we get to that question, did anyone else feel that this episode felt as if there was a whole missing episode that we didn't see? It was really jarring to go from 4 to 5. And 5, it seemed like there were lots of plot moments that we hadn't had set up and conversations that hadn't been in episode 4 that were concluded in episode 5. Did anybody else feel like that?
Yep. Especially at the start of this episode with Sammy. It did not make sense.
No, it didn't.
The flow of this episode, it sort of accentuates the problems with the plot. And so it definitely does feel like you're missing something. But it's truthfully, it's just that the plot hasn't been written very well. You know, the whole idea of bringing Zoot back and rewriting him as somebody who every person in this city either adored or was terrified of, despite that not being the actual history. To the point, like, we open with Sammy having a nightmare about Zoot. There's no established history for so many of these people to be affected by Zoot himself. Imagine if you'd never seen the earlier seasons, you watch this and you're thinking Zoot must have been something. Then you go back and you're like, he died 8 episodes in. He was nothing special. He was just a thug kid on the street, part of a thug group who is no more special than any of the other thug groups. And it's like, then as time goes on, as you continue watching the show, you're like, there were way bigger bad guys who terrorized the city that they could have used other than this random kid from season 1. You know, there's only a handful of people who should be specifically terrorized by Zoot, Ebony, Trudy, maybe Amber, you know, maybe, because she did at least, you know, she was in the city with him and the locos were a threat to her tribe, you know, maybe. But even Amber, it doesn't make sense for her to be that worried about Zoot. She'd be more worried about Ebony. You know, like, she should be, you know what I mean? It's like, so all of that, I think, compounds to this feeling of something is missing. Every single plot point for me, it feels like you didn't build up to these plot points, so they're falling flat already. And it makes it feel like you're missing something.
And it could have been solved so easily if they had, like, if in season 4 somewhere they had shown us that they'd put Zoot in a stupid game or something.
It could have retconned it, definitely.
Like, that could have been...
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have suddenly be like, oh crap, the big evil we had to fight is actually real. He's here, oh no. You know, that would have...
That would make a lot of sense. That would be a really great retcon. If you want to use him, then show that the Technos were already using him to terrify these kids when they were messing with their minds, you know?
Because that would have at least made some sense for Sammy, who was playing the game.
Yeah, because he was playing it all the time as well.
Right. You could have been like, oh, he was a subliminal message in there, all that stuff, anything, you know, so that they didn't, you know, they don't recall seeing Zoot in there, but they were getting subliminal messages and images of Zoot terrorizing them. And so when he shows up, it just triggers that trauma and that fear.
Yeah.
They don't even know why. They're like, I didn't know this guy. Why am I so afraid of him? Or whatever, you know, but nope.
Yeah, because like Sammy was so young during season one that even if people were terrified of the Locos and their great big evil leader, he might have not heard of the name, but he wasn't captive by them. So,
I mean, also, how would he know what he looked like as well? Like you say,
yeah.
You know, he was so young, but also you might have heard a name because we see Gail, yeah. When she talks about the mole rats, she's heard of the mole rats, but she doesn't know what any of them look like. She assumes that they're all this big, brave, tough tribe. She doesn't realise that Jack's one of them. So we've already had that sort of outline, like you can hear somebody's name like Zooch, but not know what he looks like. So it's even if he had heard the name, he wouldn't know what he'd look like.
Yeah.
And even if you try to say that, well, the Chosen made the city afraid of Zoot, I just don't feel like they fell on Zoot enough to make Zoot the fearful character more than it was, yeah. Jaffa who was fearful. The Chosen themselves were terrifying. Zoot was just an iconography they used. But, I mean, it was the Chosen themselves that were terrible. They were the ones killing people and enslaving people and sending them, yep. to work until they died, you know, and setting them on fire. Like, I'd be having nightmares about the Guardian. I couldn't even look at the color blue. That's how bad it would be, you know? And I'm sorry, Zoot wouldn't even be on the list.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I could imagine these children having, in from season 2-3, what they knew about the Chosen, and with, like, they didn't see people. Like, they could have thought Zoot was still alive and was the evil behind the Chosen, you know? They could have thought he was their leader. But, yeah, this way is just, it's too messed up, it doesn't make sense, there's too many plot holes.
I mean, there's too much going on where I totally agree with you. It feels like something's missing, but I just think it compounds a bad plot, or mm-hmm. at least, it's not that I think the plot's bad, it's that it's not very well written, and they're rushing through it, you know, to get to the exciting stuff. And so you have an entire season of Lex never thinking about his wife, and now that's the only thing that matters to him, and they're not even going to bother to take this opportunity to really retcon what was going on with him in season 4, to explain why he's in this headspace in season 5. He's a means to an end. The only reason why Lex is obsessed with Tyson is so that he will be sent on a quest and find Ram. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only reason he's obsessed with her, so that he and Siva can break up. And, like, yeah. all of this stuff is just kind of like, okay, mm-hmm. you know, I don't care. Like, can we go back to Liberty? It's fun there. I don't care about any of this. Whatever. That's how it felt. I was just like, okay, whatever. Sammy's having nightmares about Zoot. Whatevs. I don't know why. I don't know why he is, but I guess he has a history of being afraid of Zoot that we're just learning about. And like, whatever. Because at first I thought, wait a second, why is he dreaming about Zoot? Was he dosed with paradise too? Like, why would Mega target Sammy? This is weird. Then I had to remember, I'm like, no, it's just they wrote it so that everyone's afraid of Zoot or affected by Zoot because...
Going back to the question in this, which is, what do we think of Mega's facade? What did you guys think of that? Do you think that's real, or do you think that was for Jaffa's benefit?
It could be both. I mean, that's Mega all the way. I mean, he never really lets down his guard until the very end of the season when he's confronted by his brother. So everything you see is a mask at the end of the day. It's not until the very end of the season you realize that he was just a scared boy searching for order with abandonment issues. That's who Josh was this whole time. It's just, and so everything you see can be read in so many ways. He's playing Jaffa. He's playing everybody. Jaffa is somebody that is just, he's put in a position where if there's a fall to be taken, she'll take it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, but as long as she's useful to him, as long as she thinks she's playing him,
mm-hmm.
he'll let her think that, you know? I mean, he does a lot of things like that throughout the season. Whatever he's got to say to play a person, it doesn't really tell us if it's something he'd actually do or is interested in, but You know, he very rarely loses control or acts out in violence towards anybody, but he loves you to think he would if it works, mm-hmm. if it manipulates mm-hmm. you into doing what he wants. And so, yeah, it could be read lots of ways. Is he, I personally think he's just playing Java and allowing Java to think she's playing him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I think. Well, it feels like
it felt genuine. Though. Yeah. It felt like genuine frustration that he miscalculated over Ram. And if like it did drop there, and it was speaking to Java, I'm not too sure it was calculated that it was playing.
No, I'm with Lance on this.
According to the Ram thing, I do think he is genuinely frustrated about that, and frustrated with himself for not having anticipated that Ram would have fail safes. But the fact that he's showing it to Java, I think that's purposeful. Like, I think that's because if he doesn't want you to know he's upset or frustrated about something, he will not show you it, you know? So I believe that it's probably real. He probably is upset about the Ram thing, but it is a choice to let Java see it. And it's not because he thinks they're on the same team.
I think he's also testing her.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think he's testing her. As Sabine said, I think he's trying to see which way she will land. And she completely overplayed her hand, as she often does, and exposed the fact that she will roll over on him if she needs to, which was a mistake.
Okay.
But yeah, I do think it's pure frustration, but he then also realizes it's handy to show that to Java to get her to show him basically her cards.
Because there will be another time where I do believe what he's talking about, he's genuinely upset about it, but he's telling someone deliberately to manipulate them. So, for example, he will tell some, I can't remember who it is off the top of my head right now. He's going to tell someone about being abandoned by his brother. Now, I truly believe that he's clearly still hurt by the abandonment of his brother, but he is choosing to tell this person to get in with them. He's using this pain mm-hmm. and choosing to share it to manipulate this person into trusting him.
Well, of course.
So I think it's similar with Java. Like, he is genuinely frustrated about Ram. He's mad at himself for not seeing this coming. But the choice to let Java see it is a manipulation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear everything you guys are saying. I'm not 100% convinced. But yeah, you make great arguments. And yeah, just to finish that off, yeah, what did you make of Java's role in this whole Ebony situation with Zoot?
Whatever. That's her only motivation. She hates her sister. And none of us are satisfied with her reasons for hating her sister. We've just had to accept she hates her sister. She'll do anything to hurt Ebony in any way possible, even if it's like, how does this serve you? How does this help you?
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. She hates Ebony. So sure, she's going to totally help her sister think she's going crazy. It just doesn't even matter. Okay.
It's not surprising, and it doesn't do anything for her character because it puts her character into quite a boring situation. Like, as you guys have said, we've seen this. There's no motivation here, and it's just dull.
It still feels like Java must have been the one to go, like, okay, you guys want something to mess with the city with? I know a scary guy who could mentally mess with part of the city.
I wish they delved further into, like, Java's desperation to be adjacent to power or something. You know, for example, go back to, like, season one with Zandra. Zandra was not a cruel person, but they really did a good job of exploring what card she felt she had to play in a world where she didn't have power. And she was willing to play those cards to be adjacent to what she felt was powerful and would protect her. So how she would go to bat for Lex. Why? Because it put her in a position of safety, you know, and he could be cruel to the rest of the world as long as he was nice to her. That made her feel protected. It explored somebody who their desperation to be adjacent to power is out of protection and desperation, and it's the only card they have to play. They don't do that with Java. So it's kind of like, does she want to be in charge? Does she just want to be near power? Why does she want to be near power? Does she feel vulnerable? Does she feel unloved? Like, does she need validation? Like, why does she chase it in the way she does? She never chases being in charge herself. She she chases just being next to the person who seems to be running the show. Is she male-centered? Like, what is Java's deal? We don't know because they don't ever explore it. She just hates Ebony. That's it. That's her whole personality. Mm-hmm. She hates Ebony. And it's like, that's boring. Like, okay. A lot of people hate her. There's so many things you could do with this. Like, with Steve, would they actually explore the complexities of her feelings for her sister? You know? Mm. How... you know, both of her sisters, but Java, no, she doesn't get any exploration. There's no complexity to her whatsoever. And there could have been because she was primed for it.
Yeah. She's got potential to be the most interesting out of Java and Siva. Java's got the most potential to be the most interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
But they...
Yet she isn't.
Yeah, she isn't. They flub the ball.
Especially since her hatred literally leads her down a path of self-destruction, you know?
But then revenge is always going to take you down that road, isn't it? So,
but the audience needs to feel the revenge. We need to, you know, understand where it's coming from and feel it towards the end, you know, but you don't with Java. Yeah. It's just like, get over it. Like, you still haven't given us a good enough reason for hating her this much.
Yeah. I mean, let's look at it. People in the mall who have more reason to go on this sort of revenge spiral towards Ebony. Well, I can think of two. I can think of Trudy and I can think of Amber. And we're not seeing that from them. We're not getting enough from Java as to why she needed to do this. And it's not enough just to say, well, Ebony is her sister and you know what Ebony's like. That's not enough.
It's not enough. Especially since there's nothing else to Java, really, outside. Like, season four at least gave her some desperation. She wanted attention from Ram. She wanted Jay to pick her. But it was like, is it because she likes Jay or does she just want to be picked? You know what I mean? Like, but it was at least intriguing. You know, like, what is going on with her? There was hints that there was something underneath this very insecure person. And in season five, it's like, no, she just hates her sister. That's it. She'll just do whatever because she hates her sister. I don't know what she wants. And
I don't think they've also done enough to set up this relationship between Mega and Java as either. I don't think we've got enough in the tank here to tell us, like, why are they working together? When did they plan this? How long have they planned this for? It just feels like none of this really makes sense. And also, once he achieves what he wants, whatever he actually wants, what is Java's position going to be in this? Like, she isn't thinking about any of this. It's very strange.
She's just thinking about revenge on her sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing else for it. And it's like, what do you hope to at least accomplish?
That's what she wants out of this. Driving your sister insane.
Because when things don't pan out with Mega, and again, it's like, how did it not really pan out? You just didn't get the revenge on your sister. She immediately goes back to Ram. And it was like, what are we doing here with you? Yeah. It's like your character just gets bumped wherever she needs to be to do whatever she needs to do to be an antagonist with no real purpose or reasoning or motivation behind her actions. You're just there.
Yeah, well, that goes for half the Mallrats as well.
Go, man.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, moving on to things or people we don't care about. Let's talk about Jay.
I don't care.
I thought you were going to say Celine.
She's in here. Don't worry. So, before all of this happens, Jay is still trying to get through to Amber, but she wants nothing to do with him, chalking up the Zoot sightings to the aftermath of the reality space headsets. Furthermore, she does tell him that she buried Zoot alongside Bray, a subtle dig to Jay of the man that now stands between them, a man that he helped get rid of. Jay's troubles continue, however, as immediately after, Ebony is fed up of his obvious attraction to her, always finding him and Amber together. Jay tries to repeat there is nothing going on, but from where Ebony is standing, it's crystal clear that there is. So yeah, a simple question within all of this. Does anyone here have any sympathy for Jay?
Nah. Not at all.
I mean, I'm looking for my sympathy bone.
Search hard, search deep, everybody. Do you feel it?
I'm gonna try. Let me see. I'm gonna try. Okay, if, let me just think back to when I first saw this and I didn't know where this was going and I didn't know what a sociopath he actually was, right? Where it was like, okay, so his relationship with Ebony is going badly. Like he's reaping what he sowed. Okay, this could, he can still turn out to be a decent person. This is par for the course. You make a character do terrible things and now they gotta eat dirt. All right. So I just figured this was the eating dirt stage for Jay, you know, and I think I could have possibly had sympathy with for him if he wasn't lying to Ebony's face.
Yeah.
Like he's not being honest about the attraction to Amber at all. Like he's straight up lying to everybody, including himself, that he wants Amber. And the way he gaslights Ebony, for me, it's just unforgivable. Just like the constant, like treating her like she's crazy for seeing what's so freaking obvious, yeah. You know, instead of, you know, and doing nothing to try and bring peace. He's not working on this relationship. Like, why are you here? And he's so irritated with both Ebony and Amber. He's irritated at Ebony because she exists. Basically, that's what it is. He's upset that Ebony exists and hasn't broken it off with him. You know what yeah. I mean? That she's still holding on. He's annoyed at her for that. And he's upset that Amber can't get over the fact that her baby daddy's dead and he played a part in it. And the way he talks about it, it's like, dude, you really do not care that a young man's life is lost and that his son will never meet him. You have no empathy for these people. You're only upset that Amber won't talk to you. Like, are you freaking serious? Like, that's your only concern. You're more upset that Amber won't talk to you than the fact that your brother's dead. As far as you know, your little brother is dead, and you're just annoyed that Amber won't get over it. And you're talking about, we used to have such deep trust. And I'm like, where was the deep trust in the room with us?
When? Can I also throw something else into this? Now, Sabine, look away while I say this. I hate the way that the writers are putting in Trudy's mouth the way that they want us to feel about Jay. She has become the mouthpiece for everything that we need to feel about Jay, because Jay's too good to say it. He would never say it because he's like a perfect person. But Trudy would say it for him. And it's like, I hate that. I hate the way that they've reduced her to this.
Yeah. And the only reason I'll give it a tiny bit of a pass is because Trudy does use toxic positivity. And again, if this was leading to her and Jay finding their way to each other as two people who have these checkered pasts and are trying to move past that and earn the trust of people they've harmed and forgive themselves for that, I think it could have been a beautiful love story that she's saying these things to him. But knowing where the story goes, it's like, no, this is just a narrative trying to tell you not to believe the evidence of your own eyes and that this is who Jay actually is, you know? And yeah, it's pretty sickening. Because it's like, where is your empathy for the other people who are clearly dead because of the regime? I'm not saying you have to throw a pity party for yourself like Luke, okay? You do not have to be a theater kid Luke about your crimes, but you don't seem to care about your actual crimes. You care that a girl won't talk to you because of your crimes.
That's it. He cares that you look bad. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that he's been seen to be what he actually is, and he can't stand that. That's the thing.
He's wrapping himself up in knots, begging people to tell him he's a good person.
Yeah.
And here's Trudy, who's just like, you are, okay? Sometimes good people do bad things. We get wrapped up in bad things. And it's like, it makes sense for Trudy to say that.
Yep.
It really does make sense for her to offer that kind of comfort. It's just he doesn't deserve it. Like, she doesn't know that, but he doesn't deserve that comfort, you know? It makes sense for Trudy not to care that his relationship with Ebony's falling apart, because why should she care about Ebony's happiness? You know what I mean? Like, that makes sense. But it's just like, Jay doesn't deserve this comfort at all. He's not remorseful. He just doesn't like that he doesn't look like a great guy.
Yeah. I'm also going to say, just like the connection between Jay and Amber not really existing, why does Trudy care at the end of the day? Why is she going out on this, you know, forgiveness tour for Jay? Why does she care? She doesn't know him.
She's projecting.
That's possible. But remember, they also made Trudy be the one to bring up the attraction between the two of them back in season four. they put those words in her mouth to plant seeds in our minds that Jay and Amber right. belong together. By having Trudy say there's an obvious attraction, they kept doing that, you know, to try mm-hmm. to make the audience latch on to the idea that Jay and Amber were some destined forbidden romance of some kind mm-hmm. that would find their way to each other after they got through all of this debris of humanity, you know? And so it really, because remember, we felt it came out of nowhere for Trudy to be like, you know, he likes you. I think you like him too. And it's like, where the frick did that come from? Especially when you know she's still hoping for Bray to come home. It just felt weird. And so, yeah, suddenly Trudy being this invested in Jay and Amber, you know, being friends and Amber eventually forgiving him does seem odd, but it's being forced on us that these two belong yeah. together. Because why should Trudy care? Unless Amber has had a conversation with Trudy saying she wants Jay, she cares about Jay, that would make sense because Trudy would be doing it because she wants her friend to be happy. Right. But we haven't seen that conversation. why does she care so much?
Like her mentioning the attraction between the two of them to Ebony back then, I can totally see that being Trudy being spiteful.
Right.
Just, you know, to wind Ebony up. And let's face it, Ebony deserved that. But yeah. I just hate how positive she is about Jay.
Yeah, it is weird. Like, I don't, and it's like, is there projection? Is it that Trudy is attracted to Jay and just assumes that Amber must be? And she can see that Jay's attracted to Amber, you know? And I mean, we know Trudy is forced to live vicariously through Amber anyway. So it's like, mm-hmm. what is this? Aside from the narrative trying to convince us that Amber and Jay belong together.
So, and that Trudy doesn't deserve nice things.
Because she does care. A lot. And it's mm-hmm. kind of like, why? You know, yeah, Amber's your friend. Amber's your friend right now. And she's literally grieving a man you both knew and cared about and loved. And you're comforting the guy who's upset that he played a part in it. She won't talk to him anymore. You're being super gentle with him about this.
And it's really out of character for Trudy as well. Let's be honest. Because Trudy has always been a ride or die for Bray. And the fact mm-hmm. that Jay did this to him or was involved in, you know, the reason why he's not around anymore, I just can't see this being the way she would actually react.
Yeah.
I would like to see a little more complexity in her emotions that she's having for Jay. You know, I'd love to see her trying to balance her positive view on people, giving them second chances because that's what she wants for herself, da 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 da, seeing the best in people even when they so don't deserve it, Trudy. I'd love to see her fighting with that, the person she wants to be, and also the pain of looking at him and knowing you took my child's uncle away and I loved him long before any of you people came into my life. You know, I loved him first. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's just like I've lost him forever. But there doesn't seem to be any complexity of emotion for Trudy whatsoever, unless she's masking, and that's possible. She could be masking really hard because Trudy does tend to keep all of her pain to herself and put everybody's above hers. Theirs is more important than my pain, so maybe that's what's happening.
The thing there is, though, that you're giving motivations that don't actually exist.
You're right. I am. I'm trying.
You're giving a better story than actually this. Because on paper, all that it is that Trudy is just singing the praises of this guy who has been responsible for the death of Bray, who she's, like you say, has known for a lot longer, is a blood relative, has always been the stability in her life. Right. And she's carried a torch for him. And they've known each other longer than Amber. Because when, you know, Amber wasn't around in season 2, who was there? Trudy. Season 3, Trudy. And it's like they had this long, complicated relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Trudy and Bray, which in my opinion is a bit more interesting than Bray and Amber.
I think we can all agree that. You know, we know nobody loved Bray the way Trudy did. Nobody.
Exactly.
Nobody loved him like she did.
Feelings for Trudy were interesting as well. They had a really complicated relationship. And that has been lost in this. And it is really sad.
No, you're right. I am. I'm putting a lot of effort into trying to do some heavy lifting.
He's just a good writer, Liz. You've got to take that hat off. Take it off, put it to one side.
I'm
gonna keep it for my fave characters. I'm always gonna try. I love Trudy, so it's like, what could have been? Or maybe it's just because it's like part of our job some days when we have the energy is to show the story that could have been there with all of the same stuff happening. I guess it's important that what we've been trying to show people who listen to us, we don't hate this, like, oh, we hate technos or whatever. It's that, or we're not saying you needed to rewrite everything. We're saying that you already had a great story here. You know what I mean? And you just wasted all of this potential. It was right there that you could have just added a scene or two or some dialogue, and all of this would have been peppered up and been interesting, you know? And like, I didn't think I had the energy for it today, but here I am. You'll see me next week. I'll be like, I got nothing for you guys. Nope. This is hot garbage. Can't be saved.
It's like the only way we can view it is that, like, the whole Trudy singing Jay's praises. All my brain can make of it is, okay, she's pushing Jay towards Amber because he might be thinking, if he can redeem himself and find love with someone like Amber, maybe someday I'll find someone who's that worthy as well.
Or it could be as simple as toxic positivity. She just wants everyone to get along. Shiny, happy people. That's all she wants. And she cares about these two people, even though one of them, you're like, I don't know why she cares about him. Mm-hmm. But she does. And she wants them to be friends.
Trudy wants them to be friends for another massive breakdown, isn't she? And this time is going to be even more spectacular than the last one.
Yep.
It'd be well deserved. Because, I mean,
if anyone deserves one, it's her.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't know how any of these people are still standing up. Where I just go to bed.
Me too. I just wouldn't get up. I'd be like, no, it's okay. Yeah. You just open your eyes. You're like, the mall. Again, I'm just staying right here. I'm not. What is the point? I am not getting up to do anything. I might sleep to the kitchen with my blanket wrapped around me to get some food, but that's it.
You'd be like that great unseen character that doesn't, like, is in the mall but doesn't do anything and just kind of is always in the back of shop.
Like, why do you guys even get dressed? I don't know why you bother some days to do anything productive.
At least Trudy has a child to model certain behavior to.
Oh, my goodness. But I do miss that. I miss the days where they explored some of the depressing moods characters would go through just living in this world. Like, they've written it to the point where every character is productive every day. And it's like, no, they would not be. They would not be productive like this every freaking day. They wouldn't get up. Every single one of them would not get up every day and go do something. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I miss the earlier seasons where if there was nothing to be done, characters sat around, you know, or looked for ways to entertain themselves. They weren't like...
Did their nails.
Yeah, they just hung out. They talked, you know what I mean? They did their hair, you know, like they tried on clothes. They just talked to each other. Like, these guys act like there's stuff to do, but they're not doing anything. They're just wandering around from one point to another in the mall. And except for Ziva, who's doing a lot of laundry. A lot. Laundry.
She does it every day. Never changes their clothes, though. It's not her clothes.
She's not washing her clothes. She's finding scraps of material to wash every day.
God. Can you imagine?
Because idle hands.
We don't see them trading for food, but there's always food in the mall. I don't get it. Just lay down.
Let's move on. Because Jay isn't the only one having problems with his love life. It doesn't make sense to Lex that Tai-San can turn up and then disappear again like this. He tells Siva that he needs to find her, but Siva is finding it harder and harder to understand his point of view. She's feeling that she's being pushed out of the relationship. Lex just wants to hear from Tai-sen that she is all right and has moved on. Is that too much to ask? So yeah, the main question here, panel, is should Siva be more understanding that her relationship with Lex can't progress until his previous relationship has some form of conclusion?
No.
Or should Lex be more understanding that Siva shouldn't be held in reserve until he sorted out his feelings for Tai-sen?
Team no. Siva.
Team Siva, all the way. This is unfair.
I'm on the fence.
Because she has tried, hang on there, because she's tried really hard. She tried to help him. She has been open to helping him. She has been open to listening to this. And let's be honest, he's lying to both of them when he says this, because he's lying to himself as well. Right? Whatever he seems to think he will get when he sees Tai-sen again, we know that they will just instantly get back together. That's it. He's lying to himself if he doesn't think that's the case. And she is lying to herself if she believes him, because he's checked out of this relationship completely. He never asked her about anything about herself. Everything is about this quest to find Tai-sen. Right? And it's not fair, and she needs to do something, which is just say, it's over, in my opinion.
You guys have to remember, season 4 is the problem here. Like, you have to think about how these two, their relationship started. Lex chased Siva, fully knowing that her people were responsible for his wife being missing, and never showed a care in the world about that. Mm-hmm. She spent how long with this guy, with Tai-sen not being an issue? Like, why would she believe he was still hanging on to Tai-sen? He never behaved it. He never talked about it. He fought for her. He stole her from her husband. You know, he went to war for her. Okay. Brought her into his home, stood up for all this stuff to protect her and be like, we're a team. And all of a sudden, it's not till the end of season 4 that he ever shows anything for Tai-sen. Like, all the conversations about getting friends back, he didn't seem to care about getting his wife back. Like, people would come back showing that the technos were torturing him, and not once did he say, oh my gosh, is it happening to my Tai-sen? Like, is that happening to my wife? Never. All this time, Siva's like, okay, she's old news. And then he gets to see her in a paradise and, you know, just says, you know, tells her, it's just, that's what I had before I met you. And she's like, wow, I'm sorry you lost that, but I'm glad you had something so beautiful. And it was left at that. He didn't talk about, you know, he wasn't hung up on it. He wasn't like, oh my gosh, I suddenly realized I wish I had that. Nothing. She was dead to both of them until he sees her. Now, I'm just saying, if I was Siva, and I started dating a guy in these circumstances, and then all of a sudden his ex comes back, and then he's treating me like I don't matter, I would be like, oh, okay, so you were never over her. You've been lying to me this whole time about your feelings for her, or you just didn't realize you still had feelings for her. Either way, I'm outie, okay? Yeah. She is trying to communicate with him, but he is lying to her. And it's like he's flipping out on her whenever she asks questions about what he's doing. I think that's where Siva's upset. It's like, you're lying. You are obsessed with finding her, and you can't just tell me you want her. And then now he's like, no, I just want closure. And it's like, you didn't need closure when we took her and you hooked up with me, but now you need closure. Now you need closure. Now you need to know that she left you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm out. I'm Siva. I'm out. I'm like, need closure when we stole her, but now you need closure. Nah, I'm out. I'm out of here. I'm outie.
I have to defend Lex a little bit here, because, like, yeah, it's one thing. Okay, yeah, you're absolutely right. For all of season 4, he had not one thing to say about Tai-sen being gone and the technos being the culprits. But she did just appear after all this time, and then just to vanish straight away. There's going to be a lot of feelings there, even if the show doesn't want to explore it. There's a lot of feelings there. He hasn't had 2 attempts at closure because of these events. So it's like, that's a lot to deal with.
Well, he should talk to her about it.
He absolutely should be talking to Siva, that both of them should be more communicative and listening to each other about what they're both feeling. But again, to just defend Lex, because you said all the points for Siva, he hasn't had no closure. This is now weighing on him.
I agree with you about the closure thing.
He never even wanted the closure. He wasn't interested in closure.
But she, then, she, yeah,
the closure thing though, from what you've said. The thing is, though, closure only really works if the other part wants to close, right? So what's going to happen if Tai-san says, no, I still want to be your wife. I've always considered that I was your wife. I want us to get back together. So where's the closure there then? Is he going to say, oh, well, now I know how you feel, but I'm with Siva, so we won't be together now? I mean,
the outcome doesn't matter, but it's just the fact that there is no closure. Yeah, she's disappeared. She's vanished. She's vanished yet again. That's the second massive emotional closure he's never going to get. Come on.
The outcome matters to Siva, though.
No, it does.
The outcome really matters to Siva.
No, we're talking about Lex, though, here. You said all of the arguments for Siva.
I know, but I'm saying,
this is for Lex. He needs some closure.
Yeah,
Lex does need closure.
Yeah. But Siva should be concerned about that closure.
Of course, of course. I'm
not saying he's not being clear what he actually wants out of it. And just like Tamsin said, what happens if he finds her and she's like, I want us to be together? That Siva has to kick rocks. She has every right to be like, dude, what do you actually want? Why are you chasing her? You can say it's closure, but I don't believe you because of the way you've been acting, man. Yeah. Like, is it me you want or is it her you want? Do you just want to say goodbye to her? Like, you seem really obsessive for a guy who just wants closure because you're treating me like he's treating her like garbage. Because she's asking, where are you going? What you doing? And he's flipping out on her all the time. Yeah. This is the only episode he's been nice about it.
He's told her he's trying to find Tai-san. He needs to get closure.
No, she tells him he's trying to find Tai-san and he lies.
He's told her before and constantly. I snapped at him every single time. So no, he's lying now. Obviously, he is lying now. But it's because keeps snapping constantly.
You can look and see where he will lie and say, oh, I'm doing this. And she'd be like, no, you're looking for Tai-san.
We know this because talking to her before.
Because he's lying to her.
Oh, no. Come on.
She was constantly having a go at him. If he said he wanted to try and find Tai-san, she would snap. Of course, he's not saying no.
She was trying to help him, and he shut her out of helping to find Tai-san. He wasn't interested in her help. He just wanted to do this on his own.
Because he didn't want her to know that's what he was trying to do.
Exactly. And let's be honest, right? If our boyfriends, our partners, suddenly were like, if we offered them help and said, listen, I will help you try and find your ex, we can do this together, we can find out where they are, and they said, no, I'd rather do it on my own. I know that you used to work for the technos, but I don't want you to help me with this now. Why? Because he doesn't want her to know. He doesn't want her involved in this. He wants to be secret. They started on an affair and you can't really go back from that. She's always going to be suspicious because of how they started.
You lose them how you get them.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's true.
She can't trust him. She knows she can't trust him.
Yeah.
And he's not trustworthy. It's not that I don't feel his pain, you know, and I agree with you. I'll let all the bull crap from season 4, where he didn't give a crap about his wife, slide, and suddenly he cares because he saw her. Fine, and he needs his closure. He's not handling this well, talking to this woman who, it's like, where do you think she feels she's going to stand when you get your closure? Do you even want closure? You're not even being honest with yourself, Lex, about what you want from Tai-san. Because as soon as you found her, you weren't acting like a guy who just wanted to say goodbye and have a conversation with your wife because you'd moved on. You were acting like a guy who wanted to know what your options were with her.
Yeah.
You wanted to know, like, that's not into that little scene. Tai-san was acting like, oh, you know, there's a lot we have to talk about. She was behaving like she'd moved on, but Lex was not.
No, they both were.
He didn't even introduce her. He didn't even say, oh, by the way, this is my new girlfriend. Like, nothing. It's like Siva didn't exist. I'm just saying, if I'm Siva, I'm out. I'm leaving.
No, that's fine, but I'm just saying Lex, I can understand where Lex is coming from.
Lex deserves,
So there's actually a scene in this episode where it really underscores where Lex is coming from. And it's not the one with Siva, it's the one when he's talking to Jay and he lets his guard down and he says about until he saw Tai-san and now that he's seen her, everything has changed. And that is the truth.
Yeah, all the feelings have come back. That's absolutely true. All his feelings have come flooding back. There's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Matter to see that he doesn't want her anymore, and he won't be honest about that.
Lex compartmentalized. He just pushed his feelings for Kaisan away.
I'm just thinking you guys need to give Lex a little grace here. A little grace here. He's lost his wife twice in mysterious circumstances. I understand he's handling this completely wrong, and Steve is absolutely in the right to say bye, Lex, but give him a little grace.
Yeah.
No, I don't have anything.
Thank you, Sabine.
I'm with you on this, Liz, and to be honest, he knows in himself that he is not going to let Tyson go when he sees her again, so he should cut Steve loose. It's not
absolutely.
Fair.
We're not denying that Lex's heart is with the Tyson. That's yeah. No one is gonna deny that. She's the only one that has ever understood Lex, and he understood her, yeah. And they've both accepted each other.
Yeah.
That's no one's arguing that, but I'm just saying.
And Tyson.
Remember, the question here was, should Siva be more understanding or should Lex be more understanding? And I'm just simply saying that Siva doesn't have to be understanding of this because he's lying straight to her face as to what he wants.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying here. She does not have to be understanding of whatever he's going through because he's not being honest with her about what he actually wants. He wants Tyson, and he is holding her in reserve in case it doesn't work out, in case he can't.
She knew what she was getting into.
I don't think she did.
I don't
think Siva knew what she was getting into. Because again, Lex did not behave like a man who was trying to find his wife. He chased Siva. She didn't chase him. He chased her.
Mm. Yeah.
And all I'm saying is I'm answering the question. She don't need to be more understanding because this guy is lying straight to her face because he can't just tell her, I want my wife. I need to know if I have a chance with my wife. And if I have a chance with my wife, it's over between us. I'm sorry. And she's like, dude, the way you're acting, you're not acting like you're just going to go say goodbye to her and then come home to me. She recognizes that this guy, if he gets a chance with his wife, it's freaking over. It's no wonder she's freaking out. So I'm just answering the question.
To be honest, I don't know why Siva's really flogging this. Why is she flogging this dead horse? I don't really understand. Right, I get that she loves him, but he doesn't love her, and she should just move on.
I guess like, her, she must feel blindsided, maybe, because of how long they've been together, and Tyson hasn't been a question, and then suddenly Tyson is, and she's just like, what happened to us, and all? Maybe that's why she's just not quite ready to accept that, oh, wow, it really was that simple, that Tyson was always the one, you know? Like they remember their last conversation about it where he was like, I thought you understood. And she goes, I understood. I was okay with the ghost of your wife, but I'm not interested in a current threesome with her being in the middle of our relationship. If she's the past, I'm cool with that. If she's current, it's an issue. So I think for her, maybe she's blindsided by this because again, he never acted like he cared. And then he does. And she's the bad guy because she's like, wait, where does that leave me? It's like, your wife left again. it wasn't her fault the first time. But from Steven's perspective, it's like, dude, she had the opportunity to stick around and she didn't. So maybe she saw.
I don't know why. That's the problem.
It's like, you need to be honest to me about why you need to find all this out. Because, you know, she's sitting here. He won't let her come. He won't let her help him do this. I think it'd be completely different if he was like, okay, I'll accept your help. And they were working on this together. Then she'd feel secure in knowing, oh, he chooses me. He just needs to see her. He needs to say some things to her. But the fact that he's cutting her out, of course she feels like, oh, wow, I get it. You're telling me every day that I don't matter to you anymore. It's just her. She's your focus, your entire focus, not me. And that means if she wants to be with you again, if you find her, like, how far is this journey going to take you? What morning am I going to wake up and you've packed all your bags? And because he's already doing that today. He's packing his bags. She doesn't even know if this man's going to come back. And it's like, we can agree. If he found Tyson in Liberty, he wasn't going back to that mall. We all know it. So Siva losing her mind? Perfect sense. Perfect sense. Leave, Siva. Get out. You do not need to be more understanding about this.
All right. Yeah, let's table this discussion for now and move on to Liberty. So Elsewhere, Jack has been struggling to survive with Gail, unable to get her to see the sense in returning to the Moorats with him. Seeing no clear alternative, the two end up passing through Liberty, where Ram is struggling to ingratiate himself with his rescuer, Slade. Though Ram, who has introduced himself as Gabe, tries everything from threats to being friendly to offering rewards against Mega. But Slade is seeing right through him and knows that Ram is lying about everything. So yeah, panel, what did you make of all the storylines that have been interconnecting with Liberty? Any new thoughts on Slade and Ram? And what do you make of the knowledge we gain of the modes?
I like the way that they're making us. I really like the relationship between Ram and Slade. I like the fact that Slade did something that Ram just couldn't have foreseen, which is just not really care what happens to him, you know. And I really love that. And Ram was there having a tantrum and Slade wasn't having any of it. It was just water off a duck's back. And I love that.
I just love the fact that Ram is sitting there saying, like, I'm sick. I need special water and food and vitamins and medication. And he's never looked healthier. He's never looked better. Makeup, hair, flawless. All of a sudden, the sick, like the dark circles under the eyes, the dying, the cracked lips, it's all gone. And all I thought was, is Slade changing his diaper? They handling these logistics. Slade's just leaving him in bed all day. The bed sores, everything. Like, who's he has changed him. You know Ram must stink so bad. He must be disgusted with himself. And he looks amazing. And he's telling you, I am dying. I'm so sick. And no wonder Slade just laughs at him. Slade's like, you look like you could raise a barn, man.
I've got to be honest, though, as much as I'm enjoying having Jack back, and I think we get some great Jack lines in this, and reactions as well. I love when he brushes Gail's hair. I've got to be honest, all the Gail stuff, though, I'm finding so difficult.
Yeah.
The eye rolls Jack gives us, though.
Is it me, or is there something off about Vicky's voice? It feels like she's been dubbed. Did anyone else notice that? It's just when she speaks, it's got a weird sort of sonic quality that nobody else has got.
I don't know. For me, it always just feels like she's putting way more effort in getting the words out so they don't sound natural. Like, it doesn't sound like it's naturally just, this is the way she talks. It feels like she has to put a lot of concentration into maintaining her accent. If that's her actual accent, it doesn't feel natural. I just feel a lot of effort into getting these words out just so. And I don't know why that is. Cause you'll notice that in the first season when the kids were still trying to work out, cause a lot of them weren't allowed to have their actual accent because they were trying to make this universal and some of them struggled more than others. Like when you first meet Casey, his Kiwi accent slipped a lot, you know, and, so sometimes when I listen to her, her accent doesn't even sound natural because of the way she talks, but I don't know. Yeah. She could just have a very thick one. And here she is trying very hard to articulate so that you could actually understand her, but it never feels natural what's coming out of her mouth.
Yeah.
But maybe she's just taking on an intonation, and trying to talk a certain way for her character, but. It doesn't work any more than her character does.
No.
I wish Gail was more of a character like Dee. Okay. The whole trope of having characters have to rescue someone off the street so they can become part of our cast. It's been around since the first episode. Okay. And we've seen Jack and Ellie be used this way before. It's how we got Dee. And so Jack being used to get us another cast member isn't strange, isn't weird. We've seen it dozens of times. It's usually for a character that we're going to like and enjoy and is going to add something. And so seeing Jack be played this way to rescue and chase down this little girl to keep her safe for a character like Gail who adds nothing. This is no offense to Vicky. She didn't write this. She just played it. She did her best. But the way Gail is written, she is a useless character. She doesn't add anything. She doesn't bring anything. She doesn't feel believable. She's just, why? that's all I feel about her character. She's not really that funny, though Vicky delivers things funny, but the way Gail's written in general isn't funny. She just feels out of place. And it's like, why is that the character that was written to be dragged into the main cast? I don't understand the addition of her.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what does she bring? Like, D, you understood the purpose of why we got a D, why we got a D character, what she brings to the page, what she brings to the dynamic of the group, da 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 da. I don't understand the purpose of Gail.
No, I agree. And even when you think about when she was saying, oh, God, look at me, I look like I've been dragged through a hedge backwards. And it's like when Zandra said that when she was in the mall the first time we met her, she actually did look awful when they were cut between those two grills. They were stuck there. And when she woke up in the morning, like her makeup was smeared, her hair was all over the place. When she said that, she really looked like that. When Gail said it, she looks exactly the same. Nothing has changed.
Yeah. And it doesn't add anything to what we already know about her. We already know she's a shallow character. When Zandra said it, it was an introduction into how shallow her character could be. And then you had the added response of Lex saying, you know, like, he doesn't care. He actually says she looks horrible. And then she looks at herself and then panics that she looks horrible. And I think Ryan says she looks fine. All of it served a purpose. All of that dialogue told you something about these people and who they were and the way they treat each other and how they feel about each other. And it serves no purpose to have this scene with her because we already know she's shallow and clueless and shouldn't have survived. Like, we know. Yep. It doesn't add a thing. The only thing this does is make us laugh because Jack is chasing this idiot around and brushing her hair to keep the peace. And you're like, okay, it's cute character development that Jack wants to save a helpless waif, but why this waif who adds nothing? Why did it have to be this waif? There's so many things Gail could have been, and he saves her. I mean, I know people hate May, but she serves a purpose. So Celine, like, bringing her back home, on and on, like, these characters who get rescued and brought in to the fold of the main cast, they have a character. But Gail, it's like, why her? Like, why did you write her to be brought into the vault? So I just felt bad for Jack because I was like, part of it felt out of character that he would bother to put this much effort into saving this person. But then I was like, no, you know, I mean, it does say something about how much Jack has grown. I just don't know why this is the person they chose to have him save. I mean, the only thing she ever does that genuinely affects the plot is locking Lottie in the wardrobe in the last episode. And it still barely affected the plot. I don't. What? Oh, poor Vicky. You deserved a better role, girl. Gail could have had layers, but none. I'd love it if Gail was just, she put on this facade because it made people want to protect her rather than hurt her. And I didn't feel anything learning about the modes. They sounded really uninteresting. I'm like, your tribe scavenged makeup?
They scavenged makeup. It made them even worse. Like, oh my God. They raided for makeup. That was their main priority. And they've survived this long.
The one thing that's in complete abundance in this world and worth nothing, that's what you guys scavenged for.
It also makes you wonder why they didn't end up in the mall in the first place. Like, why weren't the men camping out in Sephora in the mall? You know?
or just at the trading market.
Oh my gosh. It's
like,
just wild.
Are these the girls that Lex got Zandra's lipstick from?
All of this could have been so interesting if we learned later on, like, there were more layers to the modes and that, you know, Gail was just a very special case. Maybe she was someone's younger sibling and they kept her, you know, guarded and safe. And then, you know, she found herself left on her own. She was someone who should have never been left on her own because she couldn't survive. It would have been interesting if Gail even suffered from like some developmental delays. And that's why she has trouble functioning in the world. But she's only played as a joke and she's not. It's not a funny joke. It's just a why, you know? There's so many things you could have done with a character like Gail who shouldn't have survived in this world. and yet has somehow. There's so many things we could have learned about her and the modes, but immediately where she's a joke, the modes are a joke. Jack having to take care of her is a joke. Because can you imagine little gal being told these sort of things simply because somebody in that tribe cared about her and didn't want her to know how scary and dangerous the world was. So they made up lies about the things they were doing so that Gel would never be afraid. Kind of like Life is Beautiful, where the father turns the whole concentration camp into a game so his son never understands the danger they're in and what's actually happening. Like, Gel could be a very deep and interesting character. Because not every helpless person in this world would have been young like Mouse. You're going to have older kids who, for many reasons, are helpless if there's no one to care for them. And Gel could have been one of them. Instead, she's an idiot. And we're supposed to laugh that she's still here for some freaking reason.
Meanwhile, Celine takes matters into her own hands by pretending to be upset and vulnerable enough to get Wizard to drop his guard.
What's this? The Iron Maiden crying?
Please. Please help me. I'm so frightened. I'm scared. What if they don't find Ram? What's going to happen to me then?
You should have thought about that before you trashed Ram.
But it wasn't me. It was Jay and Amber. I'm not a fighter. Look at me. I'm just a helpless, frightened girl.
Allowing her to knee him before making her escape. But it's all too brief, as Stats points a zapper at her. So yeah, we've not seen her properly for a while. What do you make of Celine's attempt to escape, and how sidelined she has been since the start of Season 5?
At least we get to see some efforts of her. Like, I appreciate it, because we didn't get to see a lot of Trudy and Amber in their captivity, or them trying to make any side roads, any escapes, or anything like that. So I do appreciate peeking in on Celine, seeing her process her situation, seeing her hearing the things that Stats and Wizard are saying, and figuring out that I'm in danger, you know, and making efforts to get away from them, you know, mess with that, anything. I just, okay. It's like, all right, so she's still trapped, but she's not just sitting there feeling sorry for herself. I appreciate that more than if we just kept getting clips of her sitting in the room crying,
right? Yeah,
or being, you know, like, at least she's screaming at them, she's putting up a fight, she's using any opportunity she can to get one over on them. And like, I'm like, that's better than nothing. I actually find Stats and Wizard in her situation actually kind of interesting. they've got themselves in quite a pickle, you know, and I find their banter kind of fun, and like, they at least give a real reason for why they don't hurt her. You know, we know what they're trying to get, and we understand that they're at an impasse of what do we do now? You know what I mean? Like, what are we going to do? Like, I don't know. I liked it. It was fine.
Yeah, because I think you're seeing the dynamic between Stats and Wizard as well. Like, Wizard is unhinged.
Well,
and Stats has to pull him back, doesn't he? You know, and it's like, even within their own dynamic, it's breaking down. So you're actually seeing something that we've not seen in this episode or in these last couple of episodes. You're seeing some character dynamics here. And we're also seeing it play out in front of us. Again, something we haven't seen for a while. So, yeah, even in these short scenes, they stick out to you because you've got motivations. You've got inter-conflicts between the characters. You've got Celine trying to escape. You've got Wizard threatening her. You've got Stats pulling him back. You know, there's a whole dynamic here. And like you say, they don't know what to do because they actually don't know where to find Ram. Nobody seems to care that Celine's still missing. Like, nobody in that mall cares. They just don't care.
Yeah, that's their standard protocol for missing persons. So
I know, it's like they sent May back to the mall to tell them, we've got your friend. And the mall rats have not mobilized to try and get into touch with them or do any. Like, can you imagine that if you're kidnappers, you were like, okay, let's send the ransom note, and you get no response whatsoever. Now what do you do?
It's seriously, who are the villains of this?
I mean, the only person who responded to finding out that Celine had been taken was Pride. And the rest of the Morris were like, I guess he'll handle it.
And now Pride's gone missing.
Nobody cares.
And no one cares.
It is not a concern for anyone today.
He's not Jay, so he's not important.
They're dropping like flies. Even Celine, I mean, even Trudy, who bless her heart, you know, is trying to make everyone play happy families. Even she's not bothered by the fact that Celine has been kidnapped, and you know that. But you're more worried of making sure that Amber and Jay make up, right?
Oh, God. Oh, no, when you put it like that, it's even worse.
It's so crazy. I mean, her and Amber try to make Mouse feel better because Mouse is like, May is gone. And they're just like, she said something about leaving. And it's like, you know that Celine has been kidnapped. You know that May was told by the kidnappers and even brought to their... Shouldn't you care that May is also missing?
Like, nope. We have three people that are not in the mall right now. And it's just not important. It's May, Celine...
Not important.
Pride. They're probably off with the three of them somewhere.
Oh my gosh. Celine, nobody's coming. You're going to have to get out of there on your own. Because these kidnappers legit are trying to get you rescued so they can get something. And even then!
I wonder if at this point it crossed Celine's mind that had she not driven Ryan away, someone would have come for her.
Oh... my gosh.
Ryan would have come for her.
And they would have noticed Ryan was gone either.
No, but at least
she has reasons to believe that Pride would look for her. Remember, he did ask her to marry him at some point, so.
Or that anyone might look for her. Let's be honest. I mean, anyone might care that she's missing.
She does know how useless these mall rats are at finding people who are kidnapped.
Yeah, Mouse cares.
She's the only one who cares.
Celine probably knows that she's on her own. She probably does. She probably knows that even if they wanted to find me, I know how we operate. I know it's not going to happen.
Pride didn't manage to find Amber when Amber was kidnapped. So she's pretty sure he's not going to find her.
Celine's like, we never find anybody. I'm screwed. I gotta get out of here on my own. And she's acting like someone who knows she has to get out of there on her own.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give her that. She's like, oh boy, I'm in it. And I gotta figure something out.
Okay, so
what can I do?
How do I get away from these two idiots?
I love how passionate Wizard is. As Tamsin said, he's pretty unhinged, and how unbothered Stats is by stuff. Like when they're like, why wouldn't, you know, Ram send his beacon, his locator beacon? And they're like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden Stats is like, oh, the battery, man. Right? Wizards is losing it. And Stats is like, look, dude, I reminded you. He's so unbothered. It cracks me up. He's already ready to just throw in the towel. He's just like, I guess this didn't work out. He was never that committed to this.
I mean, someone had fun writing those two.
Yeah. They're like okay, the odd couple. They're hilarious together.
Let's make him unhinged. That sounds fitting.
They are quite, it's a comedy duo, you know, but it does have a little bit of attention because it's clear how important this is to Wizard. This was all his idea. And you do feel that he would hurt Celine if it got him what he wanted, you know, especially when it's like,
for her.
Right, you know,
he goes to hit her.
He's losing it because he's lost control of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, where Stats is, again, unbothered and able to remain pretty calm. Doesn't seem all that concerned. Like, if this doesn't work out, he's skipping town. You know what I mean? Yeah. But Wizard was like, no, this was going to be a plan. We were going to get Ram back and get the Technos back. And if I lose that, what now, you know? And I don't know. I think they did a good job with those guys.
It also underscores that not everybody is down for Mega and Jay to be in charge of the Technos. That there is dissent.
They're Ram's little minions.
Yeah.
And it gives the Technos some personality, which we have, you know, like outside of just the core group that we followed. It's nice to see some extra Technos with a personality and reminding us again that they all joined for their own reasons and their own motivations. And I like that too. You know, it is the one thing that made the Technos stand out from all the other tribes.
Yeah, because as we've always said, they're the one tribe that aren't an actual tribe. They're there because it benefits them individually. They all have their own goals. And yes, they wear the uniform, but they're not like the Chosen. They're not like the Locos. They're not slavishly devoted to one thing. And I think, yeah, it's interesting. They are like a corporate people who just have adopted the language of we're a tribe, but it's just a business, or it's just like they work in an office together.
Yeah, it's a very benign kind of evil.
Yeah.
Like, this is just my 9 to 5, man, you know. And
the worst types of evil, I find.
Like, they are definitely they're like the most accurate definitions of henchmen, you yeah. know, like this is just a job, the benefits, you know, and stuff. And I do think that the reason Celine has been sidelined is because she was doing double duty with Atlantis High. And, but I will say, of all the every actor who's ever had to leave the show to do with something, Victoria has got to be the hardest working one. Because didn't she play like 2 roles in Atlantis yes. High? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, she wasn't just kind of on Atlantis High. Like, she was like, oh, I can do it all. I'll be here. I'll be full-time on the drive. I'll be full-time on this other show. Man, Victoria, take a nap, sweetie. You must have been exhausted.
True, yeah.
Because she's never really gone from the tribe for very long. The longest stint mm-hmm. we get is when she ran off to find Ryan. And it was like the just last, you know, week and a half of, like, season 3, and then she was back, you know?
Tom Hearn as well. I don't know how he did Revelations alongside
mm-hmm.
all his appearances in season 4 or 5. Yeah, he did quite a lot of double duty as well. Like, it was just Michael Wesley Smith who said, no.
Exactly. I need a break. He was like, you're not paying me enough.
he just said, I'm not doing this, that, and
yeah.
finishing high school.
And yeah, that too. Yep.
So kudos, these kids have more motivation than I probably have ever had in my entire life. I'm like proud of myself. I'm like, okay, today we need to get blueberries. That's, if I got the blueberries, it was a good day. I was productive today. I got the blueberries.
All right, that leads us to our final thoughts of the episode. It comes as no surprise to Amber that Trudy approaches her to advocate for Jay. However, Amber cannot get over his role in Bray's death. Trudy tactfully tries for an emotional attack on Amber, reminding her that Bray wouldn't want her to dwell on any blame, and that Jay lost Fed in all of this. Later, the two head out into the woods facing Eagle Mountain, where they commemorate Bray and relive the memories of him. They say their goodbyes. So yeah, we did touch on it a little bit earlier, but what did you make of Trudy advocating for Jay in the way that she did, and of course the ceremony that the two friends had to lay Bray to rest?
In front of that mountain, the cause of all of the tragedy in their life, that was the place that had heard the most about their, this is the place they went to talk about things? I don't think so. That's not correct.
It was quite important.
I found that so hilarious. When you really think of the time that Amber and Bray were together, and you're trying to tell me that this place we've never heard of, never seen them at, is where they've said the most intimate and important things to each other. And I'm like, I beg to differ. I'm sorry. What? Not only did you never have the time to come here.
The only guys he went outside with was Sasha.
Like, it's crazy that they just brought this location out of nowhere and trying to tell us, people who've been watching the Brain Amber saga for up to 5 years, that this is where they shared the most. I'm like, no, I'm thinking rooftop of the mall. I'm thinking of the cafe. I'm thinking of the boathouse. Okay, this is not where you guys said anything important to each other. I'm sorry, especially since you didn't have time to come here, ever.
No, that's the worst part. They had no time to come
here. No time.
It was just a bloody railing with a cup of cocoa.
Like, that is crazy. Like, I wish there were a better reason she chose that spot. You know, there's so many reasons they could have given her for choosing this spot to say goodbye to him here. You know, it could have been someplace Bray told her about, you know, because remember, he was a loner, you know, and was always leaving the mall in season one. I would buy that it was a place that was important to Bray, and he shared that with Amber. And so she's coming to it one last time to say goodbye to him, but trying to pretend it was special to the both of them is garbage. No, it was not. Sorry.
Yeah. Had it been an important spot to Bray, Trudy probably would have known if it was something from his past. But
or even, she doesn't have to. I'm just saying, like, it'd make more sense if it was Bray's spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he is the one person who left the mall all the time. And no one knew where he was going, what he was doing. And he was always alone. He was always saying, I work better alone, on and on and on. And she could have been like, Bray told me about this spot and it was special to him because da-da-da-da-da. I think this is the best place to lay him to rest, in this space that he found peace, you know, because he never had peace in the mall, ever.
Send him off where you send off his brother.
You know,
crazy idea. It's just a nice location. It just looks nice. Crazy idea. Yeah. I just like it.
It's important. Tamsin, it's important.
It has to be important. Sorry. You know, Tamsin, every piece of jewelry has to be passed down to the family and held on to the apocalypse. It can never just be like, I really love those earrings, okay? Never. They were my grandmother's earrings.
I love how we got the zoom in on his feather thing on his arm, just to make sure we knew what they were putting in there, you know? Like, there, he wore this. And then zoom in, he actually wore this.
I'm like, where did you find that?
It was in his bedroom, left behind from the quick packing up.
Where was that?
Where did you find that?
What about?
We can't do the ring for a thousand times. We've done that too many times. It's not important.
At least it's the one article she does have. It is the one thing she has that was exchanged between them several times.
Between them, to pry, to back again, and like, yeah, no.
What about baby Bray? Wouldn't he want this later down the line?
Mm-hmm. But remember, you know what's so messed up, I was thinking about, like, of all the things to pass on to her son. Now, the ring, not something to pass on to her son, because it didn't belong to his father. It belonged to her father. The one thing Bray gave her were his keys. The key to his back door, his front door, and his bike lock. And she threw it away immediately. Mm-hmm. She has nothing to give this baby from his father.
Where are those keys?
She left him behind in season one, remember?
Mm-hmm.
At the mall, and then she died. Before they went to Eagle Mountain, she believed he was cheating on her with Ebony, so she left the keys, and Trudy left a note for him next to the keys on the mirror, and the keys never went back to Amber.
So they're in the mall.
So where are they?
Somewhere?
They're just in the mall, somewhere. They're somewhere in Bray's belongings, or lost when
she can pass that
over
on to Bray then, baby Bray then.
Those keys are gone.
Yeah,
she wouldn't even recognize those keys if she saw them again.
Oh. I suppose his skateboards are still around. You can pass that on.
Oh, his stuff was gone. It got traded off. It disappeared. It's all gone.
I mean, we also have to factor in that the Chosen were also living in that mall for a bit. And they kept some old keys and a skateboard they found, you know.
They confiscated all their stuff. Those keys disappeared a long time ago. They're gone.
Sold off as relics from Zoot's old house.
Honestly, the best guess of where those keys are, let's say Bray took his keys back and he just kept them in his personal belongings the whole time. Those keys disappeared when the technos took them, man. They're gone. He ain't got nothing to give this kid.
R.I.P. those keys.
Those keys. They were never important to Amber. She threw those keys out as soon as she got mad at him. She was like, F your keys.
Now the arm feather makes sense now. Though. That's all she had to give. Yeah.
That's all she had left. Because she don't keep saying she'll give it up in a heartbeat.
I love that consistency about her, though.
How do we feel, though, about this as a send-off for Bray?
It was alright, to be fair. Yeah. Like,
it was fine.
It was fine.
If there's two people to say goodbye to him, it was these two people to say goodbye to him. You know, and I did like that they included moments that Trudy had with him. And because it's like, again, he was in her life longer. She loved him first. Yeah. She loved him the longest. They had the deeper relationship. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with Bramber. I'm just saying her relationship to him was just, if not more, important. Yeah. And so I'm glad that they focused on the relationship she had and what he meant to her. She is also saying goodbye to him, you know?
Yeah.
While also being Trudy and not stealing focus. She's still letting the moment be about Amber, even while holding her own pain inside because she's freaking Trudy.
Yep.
You know?
Conceal and feel.
And considering the sort of character that Bray was, this is quite restrained.
Yeah.
You know, it's no respectful. One's failing. You know?
Who's left? Who's left to mourn Bray? Would Lex? Would you take Lex to something like this?
No, you wouldn't.
He would go, though, I think, maybe.
Yeah, but you wouldn't take Lex to something like this.
No.
Let's face
these two are the right characters to do this. No,
that's not what I meant. What I meant is it was fairly restrained in terms of, because of who Bray was.
Yes.
You know, it was emotionally, it hit you with the right punch.
Appropriate for him.
And exactly. Yeah.
The person we're saying goodbye to.
Yeah, because we know the tribe can go a bit overboard with these things. And it hit just the right note, I think, for who
we
are.
You know what I also like about it? Unlike all of the other goodbyes, there's only, you know, the tribe has had a lot of situations where characters have to say goodbye. And it's usually dramatic because we're teenagers and we're all dramatic. So, you know, but often, like, the goodbye is often used as a way to just push the plot forward. It's not even so much about the goodbye. It's about some character having to say goodbye and it becomes about them. So for example, Dal's goodbye became about Amber's pain. You know what I mean? Not so much Dal losing his life. It was about poor Amber dealing with that pain of losing him. I like the fact that this is about saying goodbye to Bray. It's not a big showy thing. There's no plot moving forward momentum that comes from this. It's literally just taking a moment with these two characters saying goodbye to another beloved character, and that's it. Like, they could have left this out and it wouldn't have affected anything. They could have just put this in dialogue and told us that that's what the girls did and it would change nothing. They took the time to film it and show us in a peaceful, private place. It was so appropriate for Bray.
Mm.
And nobody else even had to know about it because who else was he that important to who's still left?
Celine.
I'm not saying he didn't have his relationships with other characters who might have wanted to say goodbye. I'm just saying, like, when you talk about the importance of two people having the chance to say goodbye, it's Trudy and Amber.
They still have Ebony in their mold, don't they?
Oh, give me a break. No. She don't. No. She does not deserve to be here to say goodbye to this man.
No.
She has done too much to him. She can have her own little ceremony. She said goodbye to Bray when she banished him from the city.
Yeah, let's be honest. He was only taken because he was outside the city.
Right.
Let's be fair. Who didn't there? Ebony.
She didn't give a damn when she found out he'd been taken. She was just annoyed, like, well, where's Amber? And was like, dude, you ruined lives for this man, and then you turned it off that quick. Like, oh, whatever. He picked her. Yeah, I don't care anymore.
Only obsessed with Amber. All of this comes back to Amber. Later down the line, if we found out that Ebony was actually carrying a torch for Amber, I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised by it.
I thought the saying goodbye to Bray was good, except the whole dialogue of this being some special place in them. I was like, no, it ain't. No, it ain't. And, you know, I did like hearing Amber's dialogue about that scene where Trudy's advocating for Jay. The saddest part about the scene is it's just a reminder this was the only conflict you needed between Amber and Jay finding their way to each other. This was the only conflict you needed. Was the fact that he is partially responsible for Bray's death.
Yep.
And that's what they got to work through to find their way to each other. You did not need to involve anybody else. You have it. It's laid out. How does Amber reconcile his part in Bray's death? You know what I mean? Like, that's all you needed. They could have spent the entire season of her trying to make peace with that and Jay trying to prove himself to her. And instead, they just ignored that conflict. It's there, but it's not really the conflict. You know what I mean? It's not really the reason these two aren't together. On and on. And it bugs me because I'm like, you had it right there. Amber has a legitimate reason not to want to give into any feelings for this guy. And honestly, I don't like Trudy using Bray as a way to emotionally manipulate Amber into forgiving Jay, because you're still left going, why does she care this much? But two, I think Bray would have something to say about her hooking up with one of the people who killed him. I think he's rolling in his grave going, excuse me? It's not that I don't want her to be happy, but I don't want her sleeping with one of the people who took me away from my child, who I'll never see or meet, and fathering that child in my place. Nah.
If we get away from the books and we think about this, though, this is really sad, I think, for Bray. Like, what you've just said there and the fact that This is it, really. We're never going to see him in this series again. Taking the books to one side. It's really sad that it's ended up this way.
And they take it all the way at the end of season 5 with that message from Casey and The Guardian and Alex.
Yeah, but
this is what I mean. It's just, it loses all its importance and meaning.
Yeah. Because it is a really tragic moment. It's when you break down everything that Bray was trying to do, everything that he and Amber tried to build together, everything that he tried to build in Amber's name, the hope that he had for being a dad and being there for Bray, like, all of that is just gone. And it was just, we watched them struggle for something and they never achieved it, and it was sad.
I appreciated that, like, a goodbye, though. Like, I was happy that I was like, okay, they're letting us know Bray's gone.
Bray is gone.
That's why I hated when they pulled back in the end of season 5, because again, they're like begging us to come back for season 6, and I was like, are you freaking serious? Like, just let him die, let him be dead, let him go. You're already dragging this Tyson thing to death. Just let him go with dignity, man.
And Zoop, come on. Let's be honest. Let's stop reanimating Zoop's corpse, for goodness sake.
Rewriting his importance over and over and over again. Like, man. Yeah, just to think that, because it'd be like if Bray had taken up with Ebony after Eagle Mountain. You know, like, think about how angry Amber is thinking that those two got together. Like, that woman tried to kill me. She left me for dead and she's your girlfriend now. I think Bray would feel the same way about Jay. I'm just saying.
Yep. And rightfully so.
And I don't care how hard the show tries to convince me that Jay should be able to step in Bray's shoes and play daddy to his child. Like, no. No. Now, if Jay had turned out to be a better person, then maybe he could have earned that place. But he never, ever does. And it doesn't matter how many times the narrative tries to convince me that he deserves to stand in those shoes. He never, ever did.
It's kind of grace that he tried as well.
And he don't give a crap about that baby. Give a crap about that baby. Didn't care about Brady. Didn't care about, he just, oof. Dirty man, Jay.
Yeah, just that part alone. Like, yeah, he had this whole thing. He's gonna have this whole thing with Trudy. But for Brady, that's the first man close to her mother.
Ugh. He's just out here wrecking then, live. Yeah, like, that's
the, and then he just switches. And then he switches over.
And I'm like, that's who these children are gonna have to look up to. Like, they will never know how great Bray was and what he was willing to do for them, you know, and how he struggled. He was just a young man. He wasn't perfect. He got things wrong. He messed up all the time. But it's not because he wasn't trying his butt off. And he was held to quite a standard a lot of the time. And Jay just gets a pass to be a garbage human being, and everyone gives him a trophy. and that's who's going to raise these kids. Ah!
Mm-hmm.
Bury him under the prison. Poor Bray, rolling in his grave.
On that note, that brings Series 5, Episode 5, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and we'll see you next time for Episode 6. So until then, bye.
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 Bye.